Franklin makes it unlawful to kill any animal within the city. Then it lists the exceptions: licensed slaughterhouses, hunting and fishing, euthanasia by a veterinarian, extermination of pests and vermin, and then one more line. Killing an animal as part of a religious ritual draws a fine of up to $500. A church that sacrifices animals in worship sues. Does the city win? No. And the reason is the most useful habit on a free exercise question. Read the statute for who is exempt. Franklin permits killing animals for food, sport, convenience, and pest control, and singles out religious ritual for a fine. That is not a neutral law. Today, the two religion clauses and the frameworks this starred topic expects you to recite cold. Here is the route. First, the free exercise clause, belief, conduct, the rule that decides most questions, and the triggers that flip it to strict scrutiny. Then, the establishment clause, which changed sharply in 2022, so some of what you learned may be out of date. Displays, schools, and money. Start with the text. The First Amendment opens with two commands about religion. Together they say, government must not run, fund, favor, or fight religion. The Establishment Clause keeps government from setting up, endorsing, or bankrolling religion. The Free Exercise Clause keeps it from punishing or burdening people for practicing their faith. The two clauses pull in opposite directions. Free exercise pushes government to make room for religion. Establishment warns it not to give religion special help. The space between, where government neither must act nor is forbidden from acting, is the play in the joints, and most exam questions live there. Both originally limited only Congress. Through the 14th Amendment, they are incorporated, so they bind every level of government: cities, school boards, public universities, state agencies. Now, Part 1, Free Exercise, and the oldest and firmest line in this area. The freedom to believe is absolute. Government can never punish what you believe, declare a religious belief true or false, or condition a job, license, or benefit on professing or renouncing a faith. What government sometimes can regulate is religiously motivated conduct. Actions, not thoughts. So Olympia may not require its teachers to swear they believe in God or deny a license because of the church someone attends. That is pure belief, flatly off limits. Whether Olympia must exempt a religious objector from a vaccination requirement or a drug ban is a conduct question. Before a conduct claim gets off the ground, the belief behind it must be sincerely held and religious in the claimant's own scheme of things. Two rules keep courts out of theology. Courts test sincerity, not truth. A judge may ask whether the person genuinely holds the belief, never whether it is correct or theologically sound. You cannot put a religion on trial. And the belief must occupy a place in the person's life parallel to a religious conviction. It need not come from an organized church or a consistent creed, but a purely secular, political, or economic view is not religious, however strongly held. Now the rule to memorize, because it decides most free exercise questions. A neutral law of general applicability that only incidentally burdens religious conduct does not violate the free exercise clause. No heightened scrutiny. It is valid so long as it is rationally related to a legitimate government interest. That holds even if the law makes a religious practice illegal and even if the burden is severe. There is no constitutional right to a religious exemption from a normal, even-handed law. Define the terms. Neutral means the law's object is not to target religion. Generally applicable means it applies across the board and does not single out religious conduct for a burden. Comparable secular conduct escapes. So Franklin bans a hallucinogenic drug with no exception for anyone. A church that uses it in worship has no free exercise right to an exemption, because the ban is neutral, aimed at drug use rather than the church, and general. The remedy is political. Ask the legislature. But that rule has grown a set of important exceptions, and spotting one is the whole game. If any is present, the law faces strict scrutiny, narrowly tailored to a compelling interest, a test government usually fails. 5 triggers. 1. The law is not neutral because it targets religion. If the object is to suppress a practice because it is religious, the law is almost automatically invalid. 2. It is not generally applicable because it spares comparable secular conduct. Treating any comparable secular activity more favorably than religious activity triggers strict scrutiny. 3. It is not generally applicable because officials can grant case-by-case exemptions at their discretion. Benefit systems that assess each applicant individually fall here. 4. Interference with the religious upbringing of children, where public school instruction substantially interferes with a family's faith and no opt-out is offered. That is a 2025 holding. And 5. Punishing conduct because it is religious. Any penalty imposed specifically because conduct is religiously motivated is targeting and gets strict scrutiny. Now back to the ordinance from the top and read it the way the exam wants. Under Section 7-3, it is unlawful to kill any animal in the city. Then come the exemptions. Slaughterhouses, hunting and fishing, veterinary euthanasia, pest extermination. Religious ritual killing draws a fine of up to $500. It permits killing animals for food, sport, convenience, and pest control, and singles out religious ritual for a fine. That is the opposite of neutral and general. Strict scrutiny applies, and Franklin almost certainly loses. An interest in animal welfare cannot be compelling when the city tolerates so much secular slaughter. The lesson generalizes. Always read a provided statute for who is exempt. Secular exemptions that swallow the rule are the tell that a law is not generally applicable. 2 applications you will see constantly. First, the Sabbath. Constitutionally, when a state runs a benefit program judging each applicant individually, it cannot deny unemployment benefits to someone forced out for refusing Sabbath work unless it satisfies strict scrutiny. That is, the individualized assessment trigger in action. Separately, and by statute, Title VII requires an employer to reasonably accommodate an employee's religious practice, including a Sabbath day off, unless it is an undue hardship. As of 2023, that means substantial increased costs to the business, far tougher than the old more than trivial cost rule. Second, 2 powerful carve-outs let religion override otherwise applicable law. The ministerial exception bars government from second-guessing a religious organization's choice of its ministers. Discrimination suits brought by an employee who qualifies as a minister are categorically barred. The employer wins without the court reaching the merits. And minister is defined functionally by whether the employee carries out vital religious functions, leading worship, teaching the faith, transmitting the mission. A teacher who teaches religion and leads prayer can qualify without ordination. The second carve-out is statutory strict scrutiny. RFRA bars the federal government from substantially burdening religious exercise, even through a neutral, generally applicable rule, unless the burden serves a compelling interest by the least restrictive means. 2 limits. RFRA does not bind the states. A companion statute, RLUIPA, reaches state and local land use and institutionalized persons. Now part 2, establishment. And here is where older notes betray you. For 50 years, courts judged establishment claims with the 3-part Lemon test: secular purpose, primary effect that neither advances nor inhibits religion, no excessive entanglement, plus an endorsement gloss. Set it aside. In 2022, the Supreme Court declared it had abandoned Lemon and the endorsement test. The Establishment Clause is now interpreted by reference to historical practices and understandings. Does the challenged action fit traditions the founding generation would have recognized as not an establishment of religion? And the central evil is coercion. Government may not coerce anyone by financial, legal, or psychological pressure to support or take part in religion. That coercion concern peaks with school children, who are impressionable and required to attend. So, three things to look for. Historical pedigree, because deep-rooted practices are presumptively permissible, and a new practice with no analog is vulnerable. Coercion, the strongest signal of a violation. And no preference among sects. That last one is the sturdiest and most testable establishment rule, and it survived the 2022 reset untouched. A law that prefers one religion or sect over another is subject to strict scrutiny and almost always falls. Neutrality between religions is a fixed point of the constitutional order. In 2025, the Supreme Court unanimously used that rule to strike down a state tax exemption granted to some faith-based charities, but not others. The sorting turned on how overtly religious their day-to-day activities looked. Sorting religious groups by theology is a forbidden denominational preference. Franklin waives a parade permit fee for churches, but not synagogues, mosques, or temples. Strict scrutiny, and Franklin loses. Displays and ceremonies now turn on pedigree and coercion. A long-standing monument with religious imagery, a decades-old cross serving as a war memorial, or a Ten Commandments monument standing for generations among other historical markers, is presumed constitutional. Legislative prayer is permissible as an unbroken tradition since the founding, so long as it does not denigrate other faiths or coerce participation. A brand new, standalone display erected to broadcast a religious message, or any display paired with coercion, is far more suspect. Public schools draw the closest scrutiny, because attendance is compelled and children are impressionable. School-sponsored religious exercise is unconstitutional. A school may not compose or lead a prayer, hold devotional Bible readings, or invite clergy to pray at graduation. Nor may it arrange student-led prayer over the public address system at a school event, including one off school property. A moment of silence is permissible with a genuine secular purpose. Unconstitutional if enacted to smuggle prayer back in. Teaching about religion is fine. Devotional practice led by the school is not. And private religious speech is protected, not established. A coach's brief personal prayer, not coerced onto students, is private expression the school may not punish. And a school that opens its facilities to non-curricular clubs must let religious clubs meet on the same terms. Money is the most heavily tested establishment area, and it has two sides pointing in opposite directions. First, may government give aid? Yes, within limits. Aid is permissible when it is religiously neutral, available to religious and secular recipients on the same terms, and where it flows to religious schools, it must reach them only through genuine, independent, private choice. That is why school vouchers are upheld. The state gives parents a voucher usable at any school, and money reaching a religious school does so because a family chose it, not because the state steered it there. Direct aid is likewise allowed if it is secular in content and does not fund religious indoctrination. Second, and this is the half people get backwards, may government exclude religious entities? Increasingly, no. Once government creates a generally available public benefit, it may not exclude an otherwise qualified recipient just because it is religious. a church shut out of a playground grant open to all nonprofits, a religious school shut out of a scholarship program. Strict scrutiny, and it fails. Excluding based on religious use, because the school would teach its faith with the funds, is equally forbidden. So a state that subsidizes private education cannot carve religious schools out. One question is still open: whether a state may charter a religious public charter school split the court 4-4 in 2025. Tax exemptions follow the same logic. Exempting religious organizations is fine as part of a broad exemption covering charitable and non-profit groups alike. An exemption available only to religious organizations is not. On curriculum, two directions. Government may not inject religion into it, so a school may not forbid teaching evolution, require balanced teaching of a religious account, or post the Ten Commandments as instruction. But it may lift burdens on religious students, and released time programs are permissible off campus, which raises the last question. How far may government go to accommodate religion? The clauses leave room, the play in the joints. A permissive accommodation is generally fine. A draft exemption for conscientious objectors. A zoning variance for a house of worship. But it can go too far. Three ways it crosses. It coerces or burdens third parties, like an absolute Sabbath right that forces employers and co-workers to absorb the cost. It prefers religion over comparable secular interests in a way history does not support. Or it delegates government power to a religious body. A word on authorities. This episode named one case, and only to tell you to stop using it, the Lemon Test. The exam will not ask you for case names here. It asks which clause is in play and which standard follows. And because this is a starred topic, no rule will be handed to you on the page. If you keep only three, keep these. Neutral and generally applicable means rational basis and no exemption. Any preference among sects draws strict scrutiny. And neutral aid delivered by genuine private choice is allowed, while excluding a religious recipient from a generally available benefit is a free exercise violation. Now, the traps. 1. Do not use the Lemon Test. Secular purpose, primary effect, entanglement is no longer the governing establishment test. It was abandoned in 2022, and an answer choice resting on it is a distractor. 2. Neutral. General laws need no religious exemption. A sincere objection does not by itself defeat an even-handed law. 3. Read the statute for exemptions. A law that spares comparable secular conduct but not religious conduct is not generally applicable, and that alone flips the standard. 4. Sincerity, not truth. A court may test whether a belief is sincerely held, never whether it is true or reasonable. An option letting government judge a belief's validity is wrong. 5. Excluding religion can violate free exercise. Denying a church or religious school a generally available public benefit because it is religious is unconstitutional. Do not assume the Establishment Clause requires that exclusion. 6. RFRA does not bind the states. States are reached only through the Companion Land Use and Prisons Statute. Time for the quick check, straight from the Bargo Question Bank. A city council opens each monthly meeting with a brief invocation, delivered by a rotating roster of local clergy from various faiths. A resident sues. The trial judge applies a three-part test he recalls from an older casebook. Does the practice have a secular purpose? Does its primary effect advance religion? And does it cause excessive entanglement? On appeal, the city argues the judge used the wrong framework for an Establishment Clause challenge under current doctrine. Is the city correct? Option 1. Yes, because establishment claims now turn on history and tradition, not that test. Option 2. No, because the three-part purpose, effect, and entanglement test remains the governing standard. Option 3. Yes, because establishment claims are now judged solely by whether government coerced anyone. Pause here if you want a moment. The answer is Option 1. The court has abandoned the old three-part Lemon test and its endorsement gloss. The Establishment Clause is now interpreted by reference to historical practices and understandings, asking whether the action fits traditions the founding generation would have accepted. The judge's purpose, effect, and entanglement inquiry is exactly the discarded framework. Option 2 is the classic trap. That test no longer governs, and legislative prayer is a paradigmatically permissible tradition besides. Option 3 captures part of the picture, since coercion is the central concern, but overstates it as the sole inquiry. History and tradition remain the frame. There are 30-plus more questions on this topic alone. 5 things to take away. 1. Belief is absolutely protected. Conduct is not, and the whole free exercise fight is about conduct. 2. A neutral law of general applicability gets rational basis and requires no religious exemption, however severe the burden. 3. 5 triggers flip that to strict scrutiny: targeting religion, sparing comparable secular conduct, individualized exemptions, substantial interference with a family's religious upbringing, and punishing conduct for being religious. 4. Establishment is now history and tradition plus coercion. Lemon is gone. 5. Any preference among sects draws strict scrutiny. Neutral aid delivered by private choice is allowed, and excluding a religious recipient from a general benefit violates free exercise, which is why Franklin loses over a $500 fine buried in an ordinance full of secular exemptions. Next time, speech, press, and association. Practice this topic with more than 2,900 exam-style questions, free to start, at nextgenbargo.com. This episode is for education and exam preparation only, not legal advice, and we are not affiliated with or endorsed by the NCBE or any bar examining authority.